30 till we do something next.
Good morning. We're going to go ahead and open up the Committee on Judiciary. Couple announcements specifically regarding members. Senator Wissett is traveling with Ways and Means, so he is excused from today, as well as Senator Dingfelter. She's out ill, so I got word that she's going to stay away from the committee today, which is a blessing in and of itself, just because if she does have something that's contagious, no matter what it is, the last thing we want is to have an opportunity to get it. So with that, should we just start at the beginning?
Sure.
So we're going to open up our first public hearing on House Bill 2304.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2304 comes from the House Judiciary Committee and allows a parent company that owns 90% of the shares to notify shareholders no later than 10 days after merger occurs, rather than 30 days before, and applies to mergers consummated on or after the effective date. There's no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
All right, thank you. We have one person that has signed up on the registry, Candace Carr. Hi, good morning. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. Chair Kozanski, members of the committee, my name is Candace Carr, and I am an associate with Perkins Coie. I'm also a member of the Oregon State Bar Business Law Section Executive Committee. And today I'm here to represent the position of the Business Law Section, which has recommended the changes to the Oregon's short-form merger. Mainly, House Bill 2304 removes an unnecessary burden on completing a short-form merger in Oregon while not causing harm to minority shareholders. The bill simply requires notice of the short-form merger within 10 days after the effective date of the merger rather than 30 days before it occurs. Just to ensure that we all understand what a short-form merger is, it is limited to very specific circumstances. One, the merger must be between a parent company and its subsidiary. Two, the parent company must hold at least 90% of the shares of its subsidiary. It's therefore a very streamlined way for that 90% or more parent company to purchase the remaining shares of the subsidiary by simply giving notice to its shareholders of the buyout and paying them for their shares. A short-form merger would not require the consent or vote of the subsidiary's minority shareholders in the first place. To protect the shareholders, however, the Oregon statute provides them with a right to judicial appraisal of the fair value of the shares. Currently, the Oregon statute requires this 30-day advance notice waiting period for the short-form merger to occur. The Oregon statute is based on the Model Business Corporation Act, which does not require an advance notice period for short-form mergers. The Model Act only requires notice to the shareholders of the effected merger within 10 days after the effective date. Oregon's 30-day delay in completing the merger is inconsistent with the administrative ease intended by the short-form merger statute in the first place. It may also increase transaction costs unnecessarily. This 10-day post-merger notice, which the bill requires, would provide adequate protection for a subsidiary's shareholders without delaying the transaction. Again, shareholders who consider themselves harmed in any way by the merger would still be able to seek judicial appraisal to receive fair value of their shares or to otherwise seek damages after completion of the merger. There are also some other technical conforming changes within the bill to retain the current substance of the shareholder appraisal rights. And finally, unrelated to the problem identified above, the bill also updates a reference to NASDAQ, which is no longer necessary, as NASDAQ recently became a national securities exchange. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today, and I would be happy to answer any of your questions or concerns. I urge you, the Senate Judiciary Committee, to move this bill to the full Senate with a due pass recommendation. Thank you again.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Boquist first.
Chair. Madam, can you, obviously you've identified a problem, so has there been problems in the past with existing mergers, and how many of these mergers actually transpire in a yearly basis in the state of Oregon that would be impacted by this? Or is this just a preventative measure?
It's not just a preventative measure. We've definitely witnessed certain instances, and I don't have an exact number per year, but in terms of either tender offers or, for example, right now we're in the middle of helping a company doing a restructuring, and it needs to, it's a 90% parent shareholder, parent company, it needs to reach its 10% minority shareholders. Some of them have moved, some of them, their addresses are not on the stock ledger, and this is a common issue that you're unable to reach them when you wouldn't have needed their vote anyway to complete the merger. And what happens is there's this 30-day window of opportunity, which to us may seem a little short, but 30 days is a really long time for things to go awry, for complications to arise and even possibly completely derail an offer, a tender offer, or a restructuring of the company. So we have certainly witnessed many instances like that here in Oregon.
Well, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
And you mentioned in your testimony and in reading the staff measure sundry, we're talking about some of the minority shareholders being basically purchased out, the less than 10%. It's a fair market value share that's determined by the parent company. Because as you just mentioned, if you're starting to do mergers and acquisitions here, that share valuation could be all over the place.
Correct. Which is why at any time after the effected merger, the Oregon statute allows for shareholders to pursue judicial appraisal of their rights. If they feel that they've been wronged in terms of how much they were paid, how much their shares were paid for, they can immediately seek an appraisal to justify that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You said they can. I'm going to ask about the 10-day period. You said the minority shareholders can immediately ask for an appraisal. Do they have to do that within a certain period of time, or can they do that after the 10-day period?
Senator Bonamici, there is the Oregon statute does not require a limited period of time to request for that judicial appraisal.
So, in follow-up, Mr. Chair? So the primary difference under this bill, then, is to change the 30 days to 10 days.
Correct. 30 days advanced, Senator Bonamici, to 10 days post.
Thank you.
And I just want to follow up on the 10 days as well. My understanding of reading this is that if this goes through, the company, parent company, can give notice up to 10 days after the merger has occurred. There's nothing to stop them from giving notice prior to it.
That's correct, Chair Pozanski.
All right, and the last part on that is that if they feel harmed, the shareholders, I'm calling the minority shareholders, they can go forward and ask for this appraisal, and it's judicial, so they have to seek that through filing some action in court?
That's correct, Chair Pozanski.
And then lastly on that is that if they determine that the value was not fair, it sounds like if it's prior to the merger occurring, they could then would receive whatever the fair market value of the share should be. But if it's after the merger has occurred, then they could seek, quote unquote, damages to reimburse them or get them back to the level of what the true value of the stock was?
Chair Pozanski, it's separate. So they would still be able to receive the fair value of their shares post-effective merger. The damages is for any other kind of claim they may have, brought against the company.
All right. Thank you for the clarity. Any other questions? Thank you very much. Let me see if there's anyone else that wanted to give testimony today on House Bill 2304. Thank you very much for taking time today and explaining everything to us.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you, bet. So I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2304. And one thing, we're going to hold these. I did put this on the record earlier. We are moving a lot of bills through the judiciary staff right now, both House bills that came from the House, Senate bills that came from the Senate. Yesterday, I did not move any of the bills into work session, and I'm not going to do that till today. I want to give the staff an opportunity to catch up, and then we'll start moving these out through work session. So it's nothing against the bills. I just want to let everyone know that I want to let the process, since we have such a short term turnaround time to get the Senate bills out, that they don't feel pressured to move other stuff through before that. So with that, we've closed the public hearing on Senate Bill 2304. We're going to go ahead and open up our public hearing on 2310A.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate House Bill 2310A comes from the House Judiciary Committee. It allows petitioner or party to request a court to modify certain FAPA orders for good cause Family Abuse Protection Act orders. It applies retroactively to all orders issued under FAPA. There's no revenue impact and no fiscal impact. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. David? And what we're going to do, David, I see that you're signed up for this bill and the next one. Let's go ahead and do, we'll do 23A now and give anyone else an opportunity. If you'll just stay here at the dais, then we'll have you come right into the next one after we finish the first one.
Thank you, Chair. So that's the next one. I have some requests of the committee.
Okay.
Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, I'm David Gannon. I'm a family law practitioner. I've been for 16 years out of Portland, but I'm not speaking today as a private practitioner. I'm speaking on behalf of the Oregon State Bar. I am the chair of the legislative subcommittee for the family law section of the Oregon State Bar. We're the sponsors of this bill, as well as for House Bill 2310. House Bill 2310 and House Bill 2311 came about through our efforts, also working with Oregon Judicial Department, through the judges that gave us commentary based on the practices of existing law. Under existing FAPA law, when there is a FAPA, the court has powers to set forth on the originating portion of the statute protections for a protected person, such as parenting time, custody regarding the children, where the person is realm protected, such as the residence, places of work, maybe the school of the children. There's a separate section of the bill that then talks about modifications. The modifications only allow for parenting time and custody modifications. It would not allow for such as changes of address, changes of pickup and drop-off times. Obviously, that's a very practical part of the restraining order, and the courts routinely did those modifications, though it didn't specify so in the statute. So what we're asking for is the modification of the FAPA bill to allow the judges to do the modifications just as they have the original authority to do a modification or do an original order of protection. We've worked with the domestic violence community, had their input on this bill. They've agreed to the modifications, and we believe that there is no known opposition, there's no known fiscal impact. And so we ask that this bill do pass through this committee with a do pass recommendation to the floor of the Senate.
All right, thank you. Questions on House Bill 2310? Not seeing any. David, just stay right there. Is anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on House Bill 2310? Not seeing anyone, we'll close the public hearing on 2310. We'll open a public hearing on 2311. Hang on 1 second.
Sorry.
I always get in trouble if I don't let counsel have her say first. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2311 comes from the House Judiciary Committee and the Oregon State Bar. It clarifies that service of process under the Oregon Rules of Civil Procedure, ORCP 7 and ORCP 9, does not violate a restraining or stalking order. And I put the ORCP 7 and 9 in your staff measure summary so you can see what they say. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you. David?
Okay, thank you, Chair Brzezinski. In the fact...
You need to re-identify yourself.
I will do that then.
That's fine.
Again, this is David Gannon. State Bar Family Law Section, sponsors of this bill. Under the existing FAPA statutes, there's a prohibition of what's called third-party contact by a restrained person to a protected person. And that's very broad and it's very universal. It has no exception for a process server delivering summonses and legal paperwork on the protected person. So if I had a restraining order against me, against my wife, and I wanted to initiate a divorce, let's say I wanted to become the petitioner of divorce, I am under the restraining order not allowed to have someone personally serve my wife to initiate the divorce proceeding. Normally, the courts have not held someone in violation of restraining order for serving a process. However, there was one case where a DA did prosecute and got a violation of restraining order when a protected person received a summons from the restrained person. So we're asking for this exception, and this is according to the rules of civil procedure, to allow proper service. We did both personal service, which is ORP 7, and mail service, which is ORP 9, which would be like for an appeals of a divorce case. We're expecting family law matters to be the issues that would be served on a protected person. And so that would not be held as a violation of the restraint on that restrained person. So we're asking again for a due pass recommendation.
All right. I have one question, but I want to see if anyone else has a question. So just for the record, if this goes forward, I understand that a person that has the restraining order against them would not be able to be held for violating the restraining order for following through with a legal process of serving. The question I have is it limited to a third party or somebody besides the individual that has the restraining order against them individually from actually perfecting service, in other words, them themselves serving versus having a third party?
Chair Brzezinski, we cited ORCP 7 and ORCP 9 because under those requirements, the person initiating a case, the petitioner, is not permitted to serve. So just by rules of civil procedure, you're supposed to use a third person.
Okay.
So I think
as a prosecutor, I just need to understand the civil side on that. So, all right. So the bottom line is we're not going to be putting those two people in direct contact. They'll have to go through the ORCPs. That does limit the individual party members serving others.
ORCP specifically says it has to be a third person that serves, so there'd be a non-compliance of the ORCPs as well as the FAPA at
that point. Thank you for the clarification. Anything else? And is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on House Bill 2311? Not seeing anyone come forward, we'll close the public hearing. And David, thank you very much for taking your time to come down. All right, colleagues, I think that's going to take care of what we've got today. Council, anything else? All right, so we are scheduled to be here on Monday, and I believe our start time is 8:30.
Is that 8:30? Okay.
And so we will adjourn until Monday morning at 8:30.